Last week we discussed an introduction to the Jewish home class, and we actually discussed many topics in that class. This week I want us to start from scratch. imagine I told you that there is the capacity to enjoy life, to have heaven on earth, to have the greatest blessings and pleasure and fun. And it doesn't take money to get there, and it doesn't take fame to get there. It's something that's accessible to every person. Now, no one said it's easy to get there, but it is accessible. It's not something that you have to have the IQ of a genius. It's not something that you have to have the backing of millionaires to acquire. It's something that every person can attain, or almost every person can attain, but it just requires work. And in truth, that's what marriage is. Marriage is quite possibly the greatest blessing on earth. The idea that you have a partner who cares for you and you care for them, who shares in your joy and your sorrow, and you share in theirs. A partner that really fills the gap in life, that suddenly life has much more meaning. Imagine, a person has father, mother, sister, brother, son, daughter. He's got a broad family. And yet Chazal say that when this person dies, the one who feels the impact the most is his wife. The parents lost a child. The children lost a parent. But Chazal tell us that to a spouse, that's the one who suffers the most. When a person dies, the one who suffers the most is their spouse. In the terminology of Chazal, en ha'isha meta ela lebala, en ha'ish meta ela leishto. When a woman dies, the only one who really, really feels it is the spouse. How does that work? So in order to understand how that works, let's take a story. There was once a famous sage here in Jerusalem named Rav Aryeh Levin. Rav Aryeh Levin was known for his kindness, for his patience, for his warmth. I once had the good fortune of dating a girl whose mother was orphaned and brought up by Rav Aryeh Levin. He took in quite a few orphans into his home that he brought up. And this girl's mother was one of the orphans who Rav Aryeh Levin brought up. And she told me, I was once in their home, I didn't marry that girl. She didn't marry me either, right? The mother told me that till today, she remembers Rav Aryeh Levin's warm hand stroking her cheek. She said, he was such a warm human being, I never had someone give me warmth like him. He wasn't my biological father, but he did bring me up. So Rav Aryeh Levin, he was the one who went into the British prisons and sat with the Jews from the Haganah and Lehi and Eitzel, the Jews who were on death row. He was known as the rabbi of the incarcerated. There are many fantastic stories. There's a great book. You could read it in the English library, A Tzaddik in Our Time. There are two volumes to that. Phenomenal stories about his warmth and his caring. So he once went to the doctor with his wife. His wife's leg was hurting. And they come into the doctor, and Rav Aryeh Levin says to the doctor, "Doctor, my wife's leg is hurting us. Us. They're both in pain." Can we imagine that? Maybe. Maybe. Can we attain that? Yes. It's attainable. The beauty of marriage is that every person can attain a beautiful marriage. Now ask almost every person you know, and they'll tell you that what I just said is a lie. Ask almost every person you know, and they'll say, "Nah, that doesn't work that way. there are the haves and the have-nots, right? Just like when it comes to a Lexus and a BMW, and there are the haves and the have-nots, like Obama likes to talk about. So by the same token in marriage, there are the haves and the have-nots. 99% of people suffer in marriage. 1% or maybe a half a percent, they get it right. So I argue with that. Our class here is focused on a totally different perspective. Our class here is focused on the idea that every marriage you know is difficult. There's no such thing as a marriage that has it easy. It doesn't work that way. The nicest people, the kindest people, the people who match most to one another will still have a difficult time making their marriage work and making it peaceful and tranquil and pleasant. But that doesn't mean they can't. And when you see a marriage that works and that's a lot of fun and the two seem to understand one another, what you don't see is how much work went into it and continues to go into it. Marriage is like a very delicate plant that you have to always tend to. Make sure it's got the right temperature, the right amount of water, the right soil, the right amount of sunlight. You have plants like that. You have plants like weeds. They grow everywhere. But when you want something precious, it needs a lot of tending to. Marriage is the same way. It doesn't work on autopilot. But if you work at it, then every person can make it work. And the most common claim is, of course I can make it work, but she can't make it work, and I can't make it work with her. Well, everyone can make that claim. And we're going to discuss how most people do make that claim. Most people take that cop-out in their marriage. Most people say, I can't make it better with her. What do you want from me? And then they could give you a whole long list of how abnormal she is. Our focus is on how you can make it work. But you have to be willing to work. If God gave every human being the capacity to find heaven on earth, then obviously the gates to it aren't easy. It's going to require work. They interviewed couples, and they asked the couples how many of them would choose the same spouse if they had to do it all over again. So 70% said they would not, and 30% said they would. So they brought this statistic to one of the top marriage counselors in the country, Rav Simcha Cohen, and he said, I don't believe it. I can't believe that 30% would remarry the same person a second time. Why? Because once you see the person and you know the person and you have to contend with the person and all of their faults, why would you want to marry that person a second time? There's a standard conversation I have about once every second or third week where a young chatan, a young groom, comes in a week or two or three or four after his marriage, and I say, pause. And he says, but I didn't say anything yet. And I say, right, I'll say it for you. So he says, what do you mean? I said, I'll tell you. She's a witch. She's worse than a witch. You can't believe that a person could be so inhumane, so insensitive, so unkind. It's not fair. There's no way you can make it work with her. So the guy looks at me and his jaw drops and he says, if you knew, why didn't you tell me? And the answer is, everyone gets that feeling. Welcome to marriage. At some point after you get to know your spouse, you say, wait a second, how could I ever make it work with this person? But everyone feels that way. They might not tell you. But I find it hard to believe there's a couple on the planet that has communication. You have couples that don't communicate. They live parallel lives. They wave to one another. They send one another an SMS. I'm picking up supper at the deli, and she says, yeah, and I'm picking up supper at the takeout, and they meet every so often. So there, maybe they don't have issues because they're leading parallel lives. But if two people are really living together, so then it becomes difficult. And the tendency of man is to think, if only my wife were more patient, if only my wife had more money, if only I had more money, if only I had more time, if only we lived in a different community, if only her parents were less nagging. People have this title, if only, dot, 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 and they fill it in. If only we had something different, then our marriage would be great. It's a lie, but people tell themselves that. if we didn't have to work such hard hours, if we had a community that was more supportive, if we had parents here, we're living all alone in Israel, if we had started off life with degrees, if we didn't start off getting married at such a young age, if we wouldn't have gotten married at such an old age where we were much tougher to change, if only my wife understood me better, if only I understood her better, if only we would have taken marital classes beforehand, if only we would have a good counselor, a therapist, many if onlys. Well, you know what? There's no such thing. My father has a saying. It used to get on our nerves as kids, but I think it's a brilliant saying. My father used to tell us, we are all our parents' survivors. My father used to say, you can wear a banner. I survived the Frankenthal house. You know, there are survivors from the Holocaust, so every person can say, I'm a survivor from that house, right? Everyone has an excuse. You have any idea where I grew up? You have any idea what I had to contend with? So, okay, we can all say that excuse, and we can live our whole life with that excuse. But we can't. We have to stand up and say, I'm going to make it work. Now, there are times that are beautiful and gorgeous and special, and nothing can compare with them. Let's take Erev Shabbos. Everyone's been working, and finally you come home to the smell of fresh challahs, and the table's set, and you sit down, you make hamotzi, and the kids start saying their divrei Torah, and you hear from this one what their day was like, and you hear from your wife what her week was like, and you share with them, and you sing and you dance, and that's a fairy tale. What does Friday night really look like? Friday afternoon, the couple is at one another's throats. Why didn't you take out the garbage? And didn't I ask you to clear the sink? And why didn't you do the dishes? And I thought you were picking up challah, so we're eating dry matzahs again this Shabbos. And you walk out the shul and you barely got a shower. And if you got a shower, you didn't get to dry out. And your tie is something like this. And you're walking in late again to shul. And you sit down and you barely have got to listen to the rabbi. And what a boring speech. Okay, you try not to fall asleep, and your kid is sitting next to you pulling at your towels. Abba, where's the candy man this Shabbos? And you finally get up, and you go and you say good Shabbos, and you leave shul, and you come back home, and you walk through the door, and your wife says, it's not my fault, the kids have been driving me crazy the whole time, there are challahs out in the closet, you could go and get them yourself, we'll have the table set in 2 minutes. And you're huffing and puffing, and you get the two challahs, and the kids are pulling the tablecloth off the table, and you try to catch every plate so it doesn't smash to the floor, and you put it back on, and you try to calm the kids down, and they're pulling at your coat, but I thought there was a candy man in Shul Abba, and you say, there was, but this Shabbos, why wasn't there a candy man, and their nose is running, and they try to pull your tie to wipe it off, and you say, wait, let me get you a tissue, and they say, but that's a nicer tissue, and you say, but it shouldn't be a tissue. Sounds like a fairy tale. No, real life is not that beautiful, pristine Shabbos where you walk in and everything's all set and everything's calm. Part of real life is that you have to contend with things playing themselves out a little differently. Rav Aryeh Levine's grandson flew in from America. He grew up in the United States. And he had heard he has this grandfather who's a huge tzaddik. And he had heard he has this grandfather, wow, he writes pieces on Torah that the whole world reads. And he couldn't wait for his first Shabbos. Now, his grandfather lost his wife. And so the grandson, Rav Benny Levine, moved in to live with the grandfather. So he's waiting for the first Friday night. And the first Friday night comes, and his grandfather goes to his daughter, who I think also lost her husband, so he presided over the Shabbos table, and they're spending the Shabbos meal, and the Shabbos meal looks exactly like I just described it, where the grandchildren are wrecking havoc. And he's sitting there waiting for the angels to come down. He knows his grandfather's a big tzaddik, so why doesn't the Shabbos table look like all the fairy tales? Because the Shabbos table is real life. And you try to make out of real life something that's beautiful, but beautiful doesn't have to be this imaginatory type of Shabbos table. Beautiful is having the kids run around. Beautiful is being well-rested enough to look at it and say, that's beautiful. So you don't have to let your kid wipe his nose on your tie. But you do have to appreciate that he's a sweet kid. And he's doing what kids do. So, there will be Friday nights which are gorgeous. But there will be Friday nights which are trying. Most couples find that Friday afternoon is a trying time. Like the Gemara says, the Satan comes into the home Friday afternoon. Let's take one more example before we expand on what's really happening here. We'll take two more examples. We have a very interesting setup in Judaism where the Torah tells us that a husband is biblically obligated to be intimate with his wife at certain junctures. So the couple is prohibited to be intimate or to touch from the minute she has her onset until she goes to mikveh, which takes somewhere in the range of 12 to 14 days, right? A woman has her onset. After 5, 6, 7 days, at some point she stops bleeding, and then she spends 7 days checking herself to make sure she's clean, and then she goes to mikveh, and then the couple can again be intimate. So we have a biblical obligation. She goes to mikveh just before sunset. She comes back after the stars come out. That night, the couple has a biblical mitzvah to be intimate. So you'd think that that afternoon is a very special time. The couple are about to get back together again. You know that 90% of couples have fights that afternoon? They're at one another's throats. By the time she goes to mikveh, he feels like telling her, don't bother. Let's take the third, final example. You're going on a trip. You're going on a honeymoon. You're going on a vacation. You know what happens when most couples are on the verge of going to vacation? They spend the first 20 minutes of the drive gritting their teeth at one another. The last hour before they went on vacation, they've already been telling one another, maybe we shouldn't do this. Maybe I should just go back to work. What's the common denominator between all of these? Whenever you're about to have closeness, whenever things are about to move forward in the relationship, so then the Yetzer Hara comes and works overtime to make fireworks, to make it that you don't get close. So Shabbos should be a time of tranquility. Shabbos should be a time when a couple are together. There's a biblical mitzvah for a couple to be intimate Friday night. And yet, you know how many couples enter Shabbos with tears in their eyes? How many women enter Shabbos crying? Now you'll say, in my house it won't be that way. I didn't say that. Learn to overcome it. Learn to accept things with a smile. So your wife says, did you take out the garbage yet? And you feel like saying, you're supposed to take out the garbage. Don't say that. You want marriage to work, you have to be willing to accept things, and you cannot work with a ruler. You can't work with, this isn't fair, this isn't right, you should be doing this. I once made a joke to my wife. I said, you know, most of the time, when we're together, I do most of the dishes. So the key here is when we're together. Because when I'm home for Shabbos, when am I home? I'm not home for supper. I'm here with you guys now, right? So I'm not doing the dishes at night. I'm not home for breakfast. I'm not home for lunch. I get to see the kids in the morning, and I get to see the kids in the afternoon, but not during mealtime. So I'm never there to do the dishes. I'm never there when there are dishes. But when we're home together, which is Friday night and Shabbos, I do all the dishes. So technically, when we're together, I do most of the dishes. But in most of life, she does most of the dishes, right? Now, I said it as a joke. But many people will look at it and say, hey, wait a second, this isn't fair. Why should I do all the dishes Friday and Shabbos? You have to view marriage as a choice. Will I make it work or won't I make it work? If you look at marriage as, this should be fair, you do your end, I do my end. Can't work that way. The only way it can work is if each side is willing to do 100% and each side looks at themselves, not at the other side. If I'm looking at what the other side is doing, then I'll always have room to say, why shouldn't you do that? Who does the diapers? Who does the diapers in the house? So here I'm stuck. If I could shut the camera, I'd tell you, the guys do the diapers. But I have a problem. There are women in the audience who follow this class, and they don't realize that when I say the guys do the diapers, it's because it's only guys here. If I'd be giving a class to girls, I'd say the girls do the diapers. Because the idea is very simple. You have to walk into marriage saying, I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to do 110%. There was once a girl I dated told me the following story. She said, I came into the dorm room, and there was another girl who already had her stuff set up in the room. So this other girl says to me, listen here, we'll make up a name. She says, Javi, I want to tell you, welcome to this room. You see all these things here? They're all my things. I'm the only one in this room before you came in. And I want to tell you something about everything I own. If you touch anything I own, I want you to know I will get very upset if you ask me for permission. Everything you see here you're welcome to use. Don't ask me questions. Whatever I have here is available for you, b'simcha. Use it in good health. It's here for both of us. What a welcome. What an attitude. Are we ready to do that when we enter marriage? Or do we say everything but? You know, there was a couple that for their wedding, someone gave them a gift, an exceptional bottle of scotch, whiskey, liquor, a little bottle that cost $500. Like a really, really, really expensive liquor. So it was a chocolate liquor, and the husband didn't want to show the wife. Little bottle. He knows it's very expensive. So he slips the bottle away, and he came across it in the gifts while she was sleeping. And he found the closet where he put it in the back of the closet to be retrieved at another time. Da 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 da. He pulls the bottle out on a day that she's out at work, and he assumes she won't be back for another 5 hours. Takes out a schnapps glass, opens the bottle, starts pouring the liquor, puts down the bottle, and the door opens. And there's his wife. And she looks at him, and he looks at her. Now, if he weren't feeling so guilty, then this could have all transpired like nothing happened. So she says, "What you doing?" And now he turns bright red. Now, had he not turned bright red, everything would have been fine. But he didn't. He couldn't. He knew what he was doing. So he starts stammering. So she says, "I don't mind if you want to drink, drink. You know, if you'd be drinking every day, I'd have an issue with it. But this is the first time since we're married that I see you drinking something. Fine. You celebrating something?" So he doesn't know what to answer. To make a long story short, she starts smelling that something here is fishy. And then she says, "Why are you so red?" And he doesn't know what to say. And so he figures he'll just tell her what's happened. I heard the story 7 or 9 years later when they came for counseling. Story happened when they were married 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I don't know. But what she said was that story was a reflection of his attitude. Now, I disagree with both of them. I disagree with him for doing what he did. I disagree with her for taking that and making it into this huge issue. This is who he is. You want marriage to work, you have to be willing to say, "He's not perfect. She's not perfect. I make mistakes. She makes mistakes." And sometimes those mistakes carry a big price tag. So it was a $500 bottle of liquor and he didn't offer it to you. Not nice. So that means he's a not nice person. We have to be very careful. It's very tempting in marriage to put a label, to say, "So that's what she's like. You see? You see?" Or, "That's what he's like." No. If we want it to work, we have to be willing to give 110% of ourselves. We cannot work with a ruler. We cannot work with an exact measurement. What I did, what she did. We have to be willing to give, 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 give. And when the other side isn't there, we have to be willing to forgive. So we have to be willing to give, and we also have to be willing to forgive. So what did we discuss today? We said that heaven on earth was afforded to every human being, almost. I say almost because there are some people who are incapable of getting married, you know. There are people who are retarded. There are people who have all kinds of issues. They're okay. But almost every person has the capacity to find heaven on earth. Obviously, if it's available, then it's not going to be easy. Marriage is the greatest investment, but it takes investment. We said 70% of people would say they would not remarry the same person and the shock is that 30% would, because the nature of marriage is that you start discovering the faults of the other person. We said the nature of man is that he tells himself, if only, if only she were more patient, we had more money, we would have gotten married younger, we would have gotten married older, etc., our marriage would work better. And that's a lie. A person has to be prepared for the fact that every marriage requires work, and with work, any marriage can be good. But you have to work at it. And we said that there are times when the couple is about to get close, and then the nature of things is that there's fireworks. Friday afternoon, the eve of her going to mikvah, just before a trip, times where the couple should be getting close together, and the nature is that there's fireworks. In order for things to work, you have to be willing to swallow things and say, okay, I'm going to forgo it. That means I have to give as much as I can, and I also have to be willing to accept that she isn't, or at least in my mind she isn't. As we study throughout the year, we'll see that much of it is our misconception. It's not our perception, it's our misconception. We don't begin to understand what a woman does. And that's why we think, ah, she's not doing as much as I am. That we will discuss as we go throughout the year. We'll see that there's a lot to learn. So, we'll pick up here, Bezachim.